Well, we're going to talk about wisdom today. And wisdom is one of those peculiar kinds of things, because what does it actually mean? And when you talk about wisdom to people in this current context, what it usually comes down to is some kind of cleverness, or perhaps some kind of pragmatism. Wise people do the thing that needs to be done and they get stuff going, which is not the worst definition of wisdom, but it's rather limited. Wisdom is a bit more than that, and we'll talk a little bit about that. And what triggered this all in my mind was the connection between our Old Testament lesson, 1 Kings, which is a book I'm spending a lot of time in these days. Not the happiest book of the Bible, but it's there and I'm spending some time with it. And our Ephesians reading, where they both talk about wisdom. And so we begin in the Old Testament where Solomon, depending on the translation you use, asks God for wisdom. He sees that there are limits that he has, that there are some things he just doesn't know enough about. So he says, can I give me this discerning heart? Which makes sense, because Solomon, depending on how you date things, might have been as young as 20 when he became king of Israel. And I don't know about you, but at 20, I would not have made a good king. One of the big problems with being 20 and sort of starts a little bit earlier than that and goes a little bit later, depending on how you are, is not only do you not know very much, you don't know you don't know very much. And so most of us at that age had no idea what our limits were because we either thought we didn't have any or we hadn't run into them or whatever the case might be. So for Solomon to realize that he had a significant lack says a lot about Solomon and about his character. And so he had this vision with God and said, I need help. You've given me this great group of people. I don't know what to do. So give me a discerning heart. Give me wisdom to govern your people and distinguish between right and wrong. And this pleases God, and God gives him wisdom. And then Solomon goes on to become the greatest king ever. Only if you stop reading there. Solomon does pretty well, all in all. But we get a little hint at the beginning where Solomon does everything David did except taking down those places of worship that weren't supposed to be there. And so Solomon got wisdom, but curiously seemed unable to apply it entirely or always, at least as it revolved around him. Now we know he's wise. We have the story of that shortly after what we read, the story of Solomon dealing with these two women. There's a live child and a dead child, and his ability to cut to the heart of the matter demonstrates wisdom. His ability to say that if we'll do this action brings the true mother out of the bush, if you will. And so he solves this problem. And we read over and over again that Solomon was wise. People came from all over the world to learn from him. So the wisdom was there. The wisdom was real. But he just didn't seem to be able to apply it to himself or to sort of all the aspects of who he was. There are some translations and some people will tell you that the problem was that he listened too carefully to some of his 300 wives and his many hundreds of concubines, and therefore they led him astray, which is nonsense. I mean, they may have been the trigger. Solomon walked over there all on his own. I'm pretty sure none of his wives was sufficiently strong or whatever else might be to force him to do much. Solomon, wise as he was, made some profound errors. And as kings go, was not that great, wise as he might have been. We read towards the end of his life that he was so hard on his people that when he died and his son came in, they said, all you have to do is lighten their load a little bit and they will love you forever. And his son didn't. We'll talk about that another day perhaps, or maybe we'll just ignore it altogether because it's not a very good story. That's the beginning of the dissolution of the nation of Israel as a unified group of people. So can you have wisdom and not use it? Obviously. Can you not have a vision, an experience with God, a profound moment with God, and have wisdom? Is that a requirement? Thankfully, no. We switch over to our Ephesians reading. And what we see at the very beginning, and I'm reading out of the New International Version, slightly different than the one in front of you, and I think Joyce was using the NRSV from what I could tell. But in the NIV, it says, be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity. Well, Paul does all kinds of things in his various writings, but he never asks us to do the impossible any more than God does. If Paul says that we should live as wise, not as unwise, it means that we can. We don't have to have this profound mystical experience with God where we speak, as it were, face to face with God and ask for wisdom. We don't have to have that to be wise. Because if it was impossible otherwise, Paul wouldn't say it. He said, Paul has lots of hard things. Well, Peter, in his own book, says, Paul, some of the things he writes are hard and complicated. But he doesn't ask us to do the impossible. We can live as wise. What does that mean? Well, this is a very interesting little paragraph here. As we go down, he says, don't be foolish, which is the opposite of wisdom. Understand what the Lord's will is. We can, in a sense, we can almost skip over verse 18. Do not get drunk on wine, which leads to debauchery. The issue there is not so much connected with us, although, you know, not getting drunk is good advice no matter what. But Paul's primarily, we think anyway, is primarily addressing other religious traditions where, in a desire to have an ecstatic union with the God, you got drunk. Sort of a shortcut to ecstasy and a shortcut to a hangover would be my guess as well. But still, so Paul's talking, you know, don't do those sorts of things. So we're not so much interested, or not so much connected with that, but we go down to verse 19. Speak to one another with psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. Sing and make music in your hearts to the Lord. Well, that's a good thing to do, isn't it? But why would he put it there? What's the connection? Well, I think the connection, and this is one that took me a moment to really sort of grasp as much as anything, goes back to this whole idea of how do you act wise? How do you exercise wisdom? Well, Solomon, I think, is a clear example of how you can't do it on your own. If there's a hallmark of kings, particularly kings of sort of the vintage that's started way at the beginning of time and all the way up to about the 1750s. Kings and queens were responsible to no one. And when you think of Solomon, and if you've read that part of Scripture, that part of the Old Testament, when you think of Solomon, think of those people who could walk up to Solomon and tell him he was wrong. I'm drawing a bit of a blank. How about you? Solomon had reached this pinnacle of power where the only people who could possibly tell him he was wrong were people he invited to tell him he was wrong, and I don't think he extended that invitation very often. So Solomon, with all of his wisdom, his undeniable wisdom, was left alone to make decisions, was exercising wisdom in a vacuum, if you will. I mean, I don't dismiss the Spirit of God being there as well, but there's something about human beings where we need each other. And I think we all know that. Whether you studied Maslow's hierarchy of needs, that little pyramid in psychology at some point, or you just realized that when you're lonely, you're not the same person you are when you're in connection. Whatever it is, we understand that we need a connection with other people, but it's even more than that. And so we jump back to Ephesians, where Paul is saying, be careful how you live, not as unwise as wise. Make the most of every opportunity. And then says, you should be singing among each other. It struck me this week, for the first time, with the help of some other people who are able to spend more time with this, you know, sort of the professional commentators and such. But something in there gave me a hint that, wait a second. The only way we can be wise, the only way we can act as wise, is if we're in community. Because what Paul says is speak to one another with psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. But you can't speak to one another if you're the only person in the room. This presupposes a community, a collection of people around you, whether it's a formal church service in a church building like this, or whatever it might be. It's saying that you are in connection with other people. And it's been my experience, which is hardly exhaustive, but is, I've at least have some, that most of the time, groups of people make better decisions than individuals, particularly about those tricky things. Because wisdom is about those tricky things. Wisdom isn't about when you walk into the bank, do you deposit that check or do you rob the bank? Doesn't take wisdom there. That one's pretty straightforward. Wisdom is, what do we do next with complicated things? Wisdom is about how do we embrace our community in ways that, like our larger community, in ways that are true to us, but still meet other people's needs. Wisdom is choosing not between good and bad, but choosing between good and good. That's where we need wisdom. When you're choosing between two good alternatives, that's when wisdom is needed. That's when you consult other people. Hardly any of us ask someone before we go to the bank what we should do, deposit the check or rob it. But when we're at those decision points in our lives, when we're deciding to downsize and move to here or there, when we're deciding at the end of high school, do I go to this university or that university or this tech school or this faith-based school or just go to work? None of these are wrong. And sometimes I think it comes down to it that God honestly doesn't care which one we choose, that they're both are equally good. But we figure that out through a discerning process that involves other people. That's where we see wisdom, is when we get together with other people to make the best decision possible. Not just weighing things in a spreadsheet, if they're amenable to that kind of measurement, although sometimes that's helpful, but asking other people who know us, who know what we want to accomplish, who know who we are, who know where we're trying to get, and they can help us make these better decisions. That's what Paul is talking about. That's one of the ways that we are wise, which doesn't mean that God doesn't occasionally give wisdom to individual people at particular times. I'm not limiting God that way. But I'm saying most of the time, most of our decisions have time enough built in for us to talk to other people. And who are you going to talk to? If it's a significant decision, are you going to talk to a stranger on the street? Well, I suppose you might. They'll think you're a little odd. You're going to talk to the people who know you. You're going to talk to people who you have been with, people that have seen you in lots of different places. You're going to talk to people with whom you have sung hymns, psalms, and spiritual songs. Doesn't mean you have to sing, by the way. If you don't like singing, you don't have to. That's not sort of the entry-level talent to getting wisdom, or being in community for that matter. But what it says in this passage and in others is that we are our best when we are not alone. We are at our best and we are able to accomplish the most when we are in a community that can support us in these things that we need to do. Wisdom isn't just cleverness. Wisdom isn't just pragmatism. Wisdom isn't any philosophical system I've ever come across, not even Mill's utilitarianism, the best good for the largest number. No, wisdom is more than that, because wisdom sometimes means doing the thing that doesn't make sense. Wisdom comes in groups of people who are listening carefully to God. And the story is told, and I don't know if it's true or not in its details, but I've seen sufficiently similar things of a group of people getting together to make a decision about where a church should go, and they are of one mind except for a single person who says something else. And you could do it democratically and take a vote. You could just shout at the other person until they change their mind. Or you could do what they did, and they decide, well, we'll wait a while till we can get consensus. This isn't a decision. It's not like the house is on fire. This is a decision that we have some time with, so let's wait. We'll get back together. And they got back together, and sure enough, they had consensus where they'd all moved to the other person's decision. Wisdom came with time and in community. Wisdom means listening to people who are the only one who thinks otherwise. They're not always right. Sometimes they are. And how are you going to hear them if you're not willing to be in a group of people who are willing to tell you what they think and what they feel and what they have discerned? That's one of the reasons we get together every Sunday, not just for worship and all these other things. It's every time we get together, we know each other just a little bit better. We're connected just a little bit more. When we consult each other It's not just talking to a stranger, it's talking to someone that we know. That's why we talk to members of our family about these decisions. It's not just the church that we consult. Talk to people who know us. There's a proverb that says, in many counselors, better decisions are made. So few of our decisions are profound and significant decisions need to be made in a heartbeat. So few of our decisions that need counsel have that deadline that's so short. The questions that have deadlines are, should I leave the house that's on fire or not? And we all know the answer there. Those are the kind of decisions that don't need wisdom. You just need to be paying attention. But wisdom is when we're trying to figure out, what do I do next? Do I continue in this job that is doing what I think it should? It's providing money for my family. I'm making connections with my coworkers. Or should I go to this other one that seems to expand the possibilities of what I might be able to do? There are no easy answers for those sorts of questions. But wisdom provides assistance. And we can have wisdom if we ask for it. Bible tells us you lack wisdom because you didn't ask. Well, when we ask for wisdom, don't ask just sitting in your room waiting for God to break in and tell you. He may. But God's communication, primarily, I have found, comes through other human beings just like me. And when God speaks through other human beings, what I have found is there's a different feel to the advice that they give me. And that's purely subjective. I'm not going to say it's to anyone, for anyone else. I can't even describe exactly what it feels like, but there's something different about it. And it comes with the people I'm in community with. When we talk about wisdom, we can fall into the trap of thinking that wisdom was only for Solomon. That wisdom is only for a particular kind of person. We think, well, I can't be wise. I'm not that person. Wisdom is for all of us. It's available for all of us, but only if we look for where it is. Only if we're willing to embrace it wherever it appears. And what I see coming out of these two texts, particularly when they're put side by side, is that we find wisdom in the community that God has placed us in, but only if we listen. Amen.